Alrighty, I just want to do a quick introduction. For those of you who have not listened to any of my other podcast episodes before, my name is Renee. I live in Asheboro, North Carolina. I have a YouTube channel that I use the handle of Fate So Twisted. I've been a YouTuber for about 13 years, and that slowly grew into a following of 65 plus thousand subscribers. And I have a story to tell with all kinds of multifaceted chapters. I lost my husband, Julian, in December 2011 in an automobile accident. My mother passed away. My adoptive mother passed away on February 4th this year, 2023, and I kind of kept a promise to her, maybe out of fear, maybe just out of respect, you know, a little bit of all of that. But I've always been a kind of a writer and a diary keeper, a journal writer. And my mama told me a long time ago, she said, "I know someday, Renee, you're gonna write a book, and it's going to be a good one." She said, "Just wait to write about me till I'm gone." So I'm going to talk a little bit about my mother and our relationship in this episode here, and probably in more upcoming episodes. But I also have begun to write again, and that will be a more detailed story of my childhood and a lot of the relationship with my adoptive mother. And I do want to give a warning here that this episode contains some very sensitive content and is not meant for children or anybody who might be triggered by childhood trauma, which includes sexual assault and things like that. So on with the podcast. Alrighty, y'all. It is Renee here with another podcast. I've not been in a while. Last year was a pretty busy year. I had a full-time job working at the same place that my daughter does. I'm not even quite sure how to start this or go about it. It almost feels like, from a lot of my family's point of view, that I really don't have any right to feel or grieve. But this past Saturday, February 4th, my adoptive mother passed away. She had been battling a lot of illnesses over the years. We had not really seen each other or spoken in about 7 years, I want to say 6 or 7 years. But, well, we did speak last year on the phone. She had a close call, and my brother called me at work and said, "You really need to try to see mama or talk to her, because they don't think she's going to make it." So I got off work, and with the intention of going to the hospital where she was so that I could see her. And instead, my brother was already waiting here at my place, and he handed me his phone, and he said, "She'll talk to you on the phone." I didn't get that closure. You know, everybody says they need closure. They want closure. I don't really know what closure is when somebody cuts you off, doesn't allow you to speak the truth, continues to condemn you. Her first words to me were, "Renee, I don't want to see you go to hell." This from a woman who lied to me, about me, and around me my whole entire life. I believe that she was a pathological liar and an instigator, a troublemaker, and she was spiteful and hateful. And there's a lot of evidence to back up what I say. I'm having such a hard time dealing with this. Her funeral was today. Apparently it was in her wishes that, you know, I not attend, but my adoptive father would not have allowed that to happen, so I never had a plan to go to her funeral or go to their house. They live about 35 minutes away from me, so conveniently I couldn't do it anyway. But she really was done with me when I started talking about family secrets on social media. And I'm not, you know, I'm 51 years old. I'll be 52 in May. It's not like I'm a Gen Xer, as they call it. I grew up in that generation where our parents just weren't, you know, you scraped your knee, your dad told you to get the hell up and stop crying about it. You got whippings, you had to pick your own hickories. If you're not from the country and you've never heard that, it's the most terrifying thing in the world for your daddy to go out there to tell you to go out to the woods and pick yourself a hickory switch. That meant you was going to get a whipping that you didn't want. I mean, at my age and having raised 5 children, I don't believe in corporal punishment for children. And that's a whole nother story for a whole different podcast. But my father had a heavy hand. My adopted father had a very heavy hand, and he dealt it out in a very cruel and demeaning way. He would hit us, punch us, kick us, whip us until our legs were blistered up and down from a fresh green switch off the tree. He would call us names, particularly me. They had a special hatred for me. And I'm not, you know, I have never been the type to try and elicit sympathy. I tell my story because it is what it is. And there's no way around it unless you want me to lie. So the truth is the truth. I mean, my adoptive father quite often called me ugly. Unattractive. You know, that children don't understand that. They can't wrap their head around that. And it made me, it did something to my personality and obviously to my self-esteem. And, you know, my mother would tell me that I was so unlovable. She would get so frustrated with me. And I think I did, you know, looking back, but I was a child. Let's remember this. I was a child. I was a child who was 4 years old when they adopted me. I am the child of cousins, which is not hard for me to say anymore. You know, people can say what they want to say. I can't help where I came from. I had no control over that. And to be honest, neither did my birth mother. She was a child. A child who, if you want to look at it, for what it is, she was being abused by her married older cousin. And unfortunately, my little bastard ass came into the world that way. And I think it was held up and against my siblings and I a lot. They went on to have 3 children together. I have 2 younger brothers. And the brother that came after me, he was adopted by she is our aunt, our adopted mother, and her husband, they also adopted him. My paternal grandparents adopted our littlest brother. And apart from that, we have numerous siblings. I honestly sometimes can't keep count, but I think I have a total of 9 siblings. But anyway, they couldn't deal, I think, with, you know, I think that my adoptive mother, and I refer to her as Mama, my birth mother, I will refer to her as Mom or my birth mother. So anyway, Mama could not handle my mental illnesses that came with being a 4-year-old who had lived with a great aunt who was extremely poor. I ate cat food and, my snack, according to what Mama told me, when she would come and visit before they adopted me, my snack was a jar of mayonnaise. So, you know, it was apart from that, wasn't the worst. My great aunt was wonderful. I kind of, with no disrespect towards my birth mother, I see my great aunt as being my true mother. She was there. She picked me up from the hospital when I was 3 days old and kept me until just before I turned 4. And I had cousins who lived next door who were just a few years older, but they were extremely abusive. They were rotten ass kids, just shitty kids. There was sexual abuse. They, you know, I think the final straw for my birth mother was when she came to visit and found them playing cowboys and Indians in the backyard with me, and they had a noose around my neck and a chair under my feet, and they were about to kick it out from under me. I think my mom knew it then that I was not going to survive there. My great aunt was almost 70, and it was difficult for her to keep up with me, much less take care of me. So she consented to letting my paternal aunt and her husband adopt me. And Daddy, I will refer to Daddy as my adopted father. Daddy and I didn't get along from the minute that it was decided I was going to be their child. He didn't want children. He always made that abundantly clear that he didn't want children. He drank a lot. If you called him a drunk, Mama would have flipped shit because he was a functional alcoholic. He worked every day. He took care of us. They built their home in 1973, just before they started fostering and adopting. And it was all about money to him, and children cost too much money. And he came from a background of, you know, his father was a farmer, and children were, you had children, so you had free labor. But I don't care. I don't care how miserable their story is. I don't care that my paternal grandfather sexually assaulted his own daughters and many other children and girls throughout his lifetime. He was a deacon of the church. He was a despicable man himself. But we're supposed to learn from the mistakes our parents made. I'm sure I didn't learn from every mistake that my adoptive parents made. And I know that especially my two oldest children suffered the consequences of that, and the fact that I dealt with mental illness my whole life. You know, back then they called it having a fit, you know, and you got a whooping for it. But I just remember being very easy to anger, easy to upset, very sensitive, and very shy. Very shy. Very terrified of people. Especially men. You know, and in the beginning, I can't, with Mama, I can't say this woman was always cruel to me, because I loved her. And I believe in the very beginning she loved me dearly. But she was ill-equipped to be a parent, especially to a child with the emotional damage that I came with. And she got tired of me. And you don't do that with your small children. You get them help. You try to work with them. You want them to thrive. But it never seemed to be the goal for Mama. Her goal just was to be a parent like the rest of her friends, to have children to dress up and adorn and take to church with her. And, you know, we were a status symbol for her. We were, you know, they built their beautiful 3-bedroom, 2-bath with a full basement, and they needed decorations for it. And children were decorations to her. I've said that for a long time, because I've encountered people that were high school friends, lifelong friends of my adopted parents. And I was telling my daughter the other day that I ran into somebody in the grocery store years ago. And this person said, "You look like a," and they said the last name of my family on both sides. And I said, they asked me who my parents were, and I told them my adopted parents' names, and they were shocked. They were shocked. They would go to poker games with them. They would go to dinner with them. And these people didn't know that my adopted parents had children. And that, it hurt me so bad to hear that. I just couldn't wrap my head around how you don't tell people you have kids. It wasn't that they adopted because they wanted to rescue children who needed rescuing. It was that she had wanted to adopt to be somebody's hero, to be uplifted and looked at as a saint. And the truth is that she was not. She was not. When I was very little, up until I got to be about 10 or 11 years old, maybe even 9, I think, you know, there were some things that started showing then. She just seemed to always have a real distaste for me. She didn't like anything about me. My adoptive father would pick on me. I was not a fat child. I was not. I was pretty normal sized kid. But he would call me fat all the time and pick on my weight. I couldn't eat in front of him because he was constantly just giving me a hard time. And I remember going to her crying once, and when I was about 9, and I told her, I said, Daddy keeps picking on me about my weight. Am I fat? She said, well, if you just lose weight, he wouldn't pick on you. So we didn't have a protector at home. We were, my brother and I both, we experienced things there while we lived with them that she turned a blind eye to. And I don't have the right to tell my little brother's story, so I'm not going to give any information on what he went through. But, you know, there's a part of me that feels this just intense anger at watching my family on social media talking about what a wonderful woman this was. And, you know, as I explained it to my brother, we didn't have the same relationship that she did with other people. When I was 11, my paternal grandfather, her father, sexually molested me. I waited a few months before I got around to telling her. I was terrified. I was absolutely, he didn't threaten me. He didn't. It's just, he was my grandfather, you know, and it was the immediate need to protect him. You know, she sat me down. I told her in church on a Wednesday night, and she sat me down after church and told me I could not tell anybody that her daddy would go to jail, that she loved her daddy more than anything in this world. She said, if I could go through it and be fine with it, so can you. And at 11 years old, I just felt so disgusted with myself. I think it was on the church ride home that she had the talk with me. And I just wished I'd never told her. I almost wished I had never told her because it caused such a divide in our relationship. I was told by multiple family members that over the years she would say, I don't know why Renee makes such a big deal out of it. All he did was touch her. It wasn't just a touch. It wasn't just a pat on the butt. It was my grandfather putting his hand between my legs, trying to stimulate me, squeezing my butt cheeks, running his finger up my butt crack, blowing in my ear, grinding on me from behind. I was standing in the kitchen making my little brother a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, and the one they adopted. And I remember when he was touching me, I looked him in the eyes, and I said, Grandpa, please stop. And I was so terrified. I was so frozen. He looked at me and told me to hush, and he just kept doing what he was doing. And when he was done, I felt so, like, you can't understand that when you're 11. You can't. It seems like children are not safe with anybody anymore. When I was a little girl, I never thought such a thing could happen. I knew somewhat. I understood sex. I understood, because I had seen things between my birth parents, unfortunately, when I was very small. And those are memories that are locked into my brain. And I also was molested by my cousins who lived next door. And in a more violent way, the children were extremely violent towards me. The things that they did to me were very traumatizing. But, you know, with my grandfather, I looked up to him so much. He was my paternal grandfather. He was the only man that up until that point I trusted. I wholeheartedly trusted him. I couldn't stand my adoptive father because he was so cruel to me. Grandpa was never cruel to me. And I don't remember any grooming or anything that would have resembled grooming, but, you know, The thing is, with childhood trauma like that, when we recall it, when we bring it up in our minds, it feels like we're still that child. We're still that child, and we think like that child. So I don't know if before that he was a good grandfather or not, or was he grooming me, or was he, did he touch me before that? Because I used to happily climb up in my grandfather's lap and, you know, snap green beans with him and watch TV with him and sit at the Christmas dinner table in his lap and eat out of my plate sitting in his lap. You know, I had so much love and respect for my grandfather, and I don't think anybody in my family who has not experienced that from him can understand how bad that hurt. The one man that I had trust for, that I believed would never hurt me, violated every bit of my trust, and it absolutely changed who I was from that moment. And my mama's reaction, she started to hate me the minute that she knew he did it, because they used to call me Big Mouth. You know, I ran my mouth to me. I just didn't have a filter. That's what they call it nowadays. I didn't have a filter. I just said whatever was in my head. Unfortunately, bless her heart, my oldest daughter inherited that directly from me on next level. Again, another podcast for another day. But I didn't realize how bad it would get. You know, I my whole family doesn't really talk to me, with the exception of my siblings and a few cousins. You know, they think they got it figured out. And the thing is, I had posted on social media when I talked to my mother, my mama on the phone last year. She said, you know, Renee, I forgive you. I never ask her for forgiveness. I don't want forgiveness for being truthful. But she said, I forgive you for the things you said on Facebook. She said, I saw them. I know about every one of them. You can't keep anything from me. And when she said that in that conversation, it triggered something in my brain that I just was done. I didn't say anything to her. I didn't argue with her about it. I just was done. Like, she couldn't say it. She wouldn't say, I'm sorry that you went through those things. And she did not say, you lie, because one thing I don't have a reputation for is being a liar. If anything, you know, I remember being told repeatedly as a child, you don't have to be so dad blame honest. You don't have to tell everything you know. I didn't understand it. I think part of that was me just being naturally a storyteller. You know, I like to talk about things, and I didn't realize that keeping the family secrets was the only way to keep the family. I could sit here and say it doesn't matter. I don't care. I do care. It hurts. It hurts my feelings. Dying does not excuse you from being an absolutely shitty person. And I don't care if everybody else on the planet saw her as a saint. The relationship between she and I was horrible. But, you know, she tried through my whole life to demonize me, to take away anything good I had, including my second husband, Julian. You know, she got into this repeatedly, constantly, always calling Child Protective Services on us. The accusations would get worse and worse every time. She was trying really hard, along with my oldest daughter, to have my children removed and have my husband put in jail, because she partly resented him because he was Mexican, and partly because she knew he loved me. She saw our relationship, and it wasn't like hers with her spouse. And she said that to me after he died. She said, I was so jealous of your relationship. She said, I wish your daddy loved me the way Julian loved you. Things that she said to me, I know who she really was. I know who she wanted the world to think she was. But that wasn't her. If you take a long, hard look at the things she did, she picked up causes, I called them quote-unquote causes over the years. She would find an individual who was down and desperate and destitute, and she would help them as long as they presented a good image in church, as long as it looked like she made a dramatic change in their life. In reality, she was just hateful. She was hateful. She did not like people. She talked about everybody. I think one reason that I was so talkative and outspoken and I didn't have a filter is because I was her sounding board, or I was the person that she came to gossip to. I mean, even when I was little, 6 or 7 years old, I can remember her talking to me about this or that person in the church, and she would say, he's a homosexual, but his wife don't want to divorce him. You know, she'd tell everybody's business, but she kept her business real close to the chest. And I think when I realized that, it took me a long time. I gave her my secrets, and she would tell them. She would tell it, talk so unbecoming of me. Not at like I was her daughter. It was like I was... She just was disgusted by me. She hated everything about me. I think the biggest reason that I feel that I grieve right now is because I did love my mother. I loved Mama. I just wanted her to, you know, we had conversations. She would never let me finish the conversation. I would tell her, I would say, Mama, if you just told the truth, people's opinions of me would change. It's not going to make you look bad to be honest. I said, if you believe in the Bible, that you raised me, you know, smacking me in the face with every little scripture she could pull out that served a purpose for condemning me. I told her, I said, you have lied. You have told lies. She's, you know, one of the biggest deals was my adoptive father never believing that it was her that called social services. Even though, to me, she never denied it. She never come to me and said, I didn't do it. And a lot of the times it was, well, we wanted to take the kids on a trip and you grounded them. You know, I told her, I said, you know, Daddy doesn't know what you were doing. And she would say things like, you don't know what it's like to have to live with him. Well, he probably knew she was a pathological liar. He knows she lied all the time. I mean, I think that's how their union started. But Daddy said something to me years ago that kind of hinted to that, you know, they had done something they shouldn't have done, and she kind of manipulated him into marrying her. But anyway, like I said, a different story for a different podcast. I'm venting, and I'm probably going to do this way different than I've ever done before, because I don't think I'm afraid to talk about things anymore. And that's not necessarily just because she has passed on, but that is part of the reason. You know, she was my mama, and I loved her very much. But at the same time, she was my mama, and I resented her very much. I hated her for constructing a lie that the whole family went along with. You know, I resented her for always trying to destroy me instead of trying to be a mother and lifting me up. Instead, she, you know, she was jealous and hateful. And one thing she said to me in that conversation last year in such a sarcastic way, and I never asked her for any of this. She did a lot of the talking. I just let it flow. I really wish I'd have recorded that conversation. But one thing she said to me was, you know what, Renee? You're better than me. You can draw better. You're more talented. You can do anything that I never could do, the things you can do. That's not a mother making their child feel good that they're doing good things. That's hate and jealousy and anger. And why? The only difference between me and her, when it comes to our artistic abilities, is that I was not afraid to use mine. I didn't feel like it was a sin. I mean, I did at first. For a long time, I could not fully open myself up artistically because it felt sinful. I think when I gained my YouTube channel and I started gaining a big following, that changed a little bit for me. And after she said that to me on the phone, it definitely took a turn. It changed for me. And, you know, my daughter, my baby girl, was standing there listening to most of the conversation. And she just shook her head and laughed. She said, "Mama, she hasn't changed. She hasn't changed." She said, "Be done with that woman." I mean, it's sad that those should have been her grandchildren, but they don't hurt for her. My three youngest children were not accepted by her because their father was Latino. But she was my mama. And any chance of being able to just hug her and kiss her cheek and tell her I loved her and it just didn't matter to me, that's gone. And that's all I wanted. I didn't want to get in her face and cuss her out and tell her I hated her and make her feel like shit. I mean, she did that enough for me, you know. I just wanted to love my mama. I just wanted to hold her hand. It was such a long, painful journey to death for her because she developed breast cancer, I guess, 10 years ago. I can't remember. It's called IBS or something. It's a very invasive breast cancer, and they caught it at the very late stages, and she survived that. And she's had a bad heart for as long as I can remember. That was also blamed on me. My adoptive father said that I was the reason she had a bad heart. She didn't ever correct anybody on that. She had a bad heart because she had rheumatic fever, something like that, when she was a child. And so did my adoptive father. He got the infertility. She got the heart problems. But she, you know, my brothers and my older children would tell me that she developed cancer everywhere. I mean, it was a very slow, long, painful death. And I don't feel like she deserved that. I just feel like, you know, she used to tell me when I was a kid that when somebody would get sick or get cancer, one really strong memory I have is a neighbor or a church friend. I can't remember the relationship, but the lady got cancer in her fingernails. And I remember going with Mama, being about 7 or 8 years old, I think, when this woman passed or was sick. And as we were leaving and we were in the car driving home, she said, "Well, you know, the Lord is probably punishing her. I mean, she wore them red nails like a tramp." You know, she talked shit about that woman the whole way home. And I thought, why did you just go visit her and take her food and stuff for her family? If, you know, she was very judgmental. And I couldn't help but think that when she got ill, I thought about how she would always talk about somebody's transgressions or mistakes or whatever, lifestyle, and attribute that to their suffering. And knowing that she suffered for nearly 10 years, you know, she had to have a mastectomy. She had numerous procedures to try and treat the cancers that were ravaging her body. She developed severe brittle bones and osteoarthritis, just like her mother. And she was hunched over. And somebody sent me photographs of her because I had not seen her in a long time. And last year, her neighbor, who was friends with her, sent me a photo of her as she was. And I would have walked right past her. I wouldn't have known it was my mother. She was always so well dressed. I always thought she was beautiful. She always smelled good. She always had makeup on. She curled her hair every night with bobby pins before she went to bed. You know, she just was always immaculate. Just, I looked up to her. And to see that photo of her withering away, and I thought to myself when I seen it, what did you do to God, Mama? What did you do to be punished this way? And I don't really feel that way 100%. I don't even believe in the biblical things or the God that she taught me to believe in as a child. I do believe in karma. I do believe that we have a spiritual side. I do believe there's a good place and a bad place for us to go, not necessarily what the Christian Bible teaches us, but I believe in things. And I think she felt that way. I think she felt punished because the conversation that I did have with her, you know, I think she was just maybe had to eat a little humble pie. Maybe she was eating her own words. And she wanted it to be kept extremely secret that she was that sick. And I believe that's partly because her beliefs and the ways that she taught us told her that she was being punished for her transgressions. I mean, it's a simple thing. I never wanted Mama to drop to her knees and beg me for forgiveness or tell me she was wrong and just, you know, I just wanted her to be my mama. I just wanted her to stop chastising me and stop trying to make me feel bad all the time. If you feel bad about something you did, Mama, feel bad about it. You don't have to punish other people. But it is what it is. She's gone. I made a conscious decision to, even though I haven't spoken to most family in a long time, I'm cutting most of them off. They're gone from my social media. And I don't care anymore. I do. But I don't. And I'm going to make myself not care, and I'm going to move on from this. And my wonderful, beautiful, wise daughter, Daisy, said it. You know, Mama, grieve and then move on. Because this woman showed you no compassion, no love, no kindness. She doesn't deserve for you to hurt over her the way you are hurting. But it's hard when you feel like you don't have parents. So, and no disrespect to my birth mother. I love her with all my heart and soul. I never, ever felt that way about her. I knew her growing up, so I don't want her to feel bad. She was a child, you know. Nobody should hold that against her. She wasn't given very many choices. It was 1971. She was pregnant by her cousin. What the fuck was she going to do? You know, here it is. I am going to be talking about a lot of these, this a lot more. I like talking because I think that telling your story has served several purposes. First of all, I telling my story allows me to own it. Nobody else gets to take my story and do what they want with it because it's mine. You can talk about me behind my back. You can say that I did this and I did that, but bring it. You know, it's like I said after she said something about the stuff I posted, I thought, well, call me out on a lie then, you know. But also, it serves the purpose of helping somebody else to know that you're not the only one out there and that you can survive around a childhood without love. You know, it's sad, but it happens a lot. And I think it happens a lot with adoptive parents than people think. I don't think that a lot of adoptive parents are prepared. They think it's going to be some magical moment, and it's not. You're getting children who, for whatever reason, were removed from their birth parents voluntarily or by the state or however it happens. And you can't expect perfection from those children. And the only thing that you should be required to do is love them unconditionally, especially if you adopt them. You don't have any right to damage a child at all. But when you adopt them, when you set out, I mean, it's a process. It's a process just like carrying a baby for 9 months is a process. You have to get a lawyer. You have to, your home has to be inspected. You have to be, you know, unfortunately, I think in 1971, there was not much conversation. There was not much investigating my birth parents because they were foster parents and they were just automatically considered to be okay. Daddy told me repeatedly throughout my life that he never wanted kids, and that's putting it nicely. But I'm taking my opportunity to talk because nobody's home, and I need to I needed to do this, and I needed to do it by myself, without my kids in the other room or something. But anyway, stay tuned. I have stories to tell. I did start writing today. It seemed appropriate to begin to write the story of my childhood on the day that they were laying Mama to rest. And I do sincerely hope she rests in peace. I hope she found some peace in her last moments. So that's it. I'll see y'all next time. Peace, y'all. Bye-bye.